from the poison. Agnina, by the fire. Bhavuva, turned. Basmasat, to ashes. Sadya, immediately. Pashyatam, while they were watching. Savadinam, all embodied living beings. Translation. While living beings all over the universe looked on, the body of the great self-realized saint among kings was immediately burned to ashes by the fire of the snake's poison. Next verse, I will just read the translations. There arose a terrible cry of lamentation in all directions, on the earth and in the heavens, and all the demigods, demons, human beings, and other creatures were astonished. Next verse. Kettle drums sounded in the regions of the demigods, and the celestial Gandharvas and Apsaras sang. The demigods showered flowers and spoke words of praise. There's a short purport. Although lamenting at first, all learned persons, including the demigods, soon realized that a great soul had gone back home, back to Godhead. This was certainly a cause for celebration. Next verse. Hearing that his father had been fatally bitten by the snake bird, Maharaj Janmajaya became extremely angry and had Brahmanas perform a mighty sacrifice in which he offered all the snakes in the world into the sacrificial fire. Next verse. When Takshaka saw even the most powerful serpents being burned in the blazing fire of that snake sacrifice, he was overwhelmed with fear and approached Lord Indra for shelter. When King Janmajaya did not see Takshaka entering his sacrificial fire, he said to the Brahmanas, "Why is not Takshaka there, the lowest of all serpents burning in this fire?" Next verse. The Brahmanas replied, "O best of kings, the snake Takshaka has not fallen into the fire because he is being protected by Indra, whom he has approached for shelter. Indra is holding him back from the fire." Next verse. The intelligent King Janmajaya, hearing these words, replied to the priests, "Then, my dear Brahmanas, why not make Takshaka fall into the fire along with his protector, Indra?" Hearing this, the priest then chanted his mantra for offering Takshaka together with Indra as an oblation into the sacrificial fire. "O Takshaka, fall immediately into this fire together with Indra and his entire host of demigods." Next verse. When Lord Indra, along with his airplane and Takshaka, was suddenly thrown from his position by these insulting words of the Brahmanas, he became very disturbed. Brihaspati, the son of Angira Muni, seeing Indra falling from the sky in his airplane along with Takshaka, approached King Janmajaya and spoke to him as follows. "O king among men, it is not befitting that this king of snakes meet death at your hands, for he has drunk the nectar of the immortal demigods. Consequently, he is not subject to the ordinary symptoms of old age and death." And verse number 25. "The life and death of an embodied soul and his destination in the next life are all caused by himself through his own activity. Therefore, O King, no other agent is actually responsible for creating one's happiness and distress." And purport. Although King Parikshit apparently died by the bite of Takshaka, it was Lord Krishna himself who brought the king back to the kingdom of God. Brihaspati wanted young King Janmajaya to see things from the spiritual point of view. So we've got a whole series here of verses, and things are, the story is unfolding. So it is quite interesting how Takshaka wants actually to Parikshit Maharaj's son, Janmajaya, he wants a revenge. He's in a revengeful mood that he gets very angry seeing that his father died by the snake bird, by Takshaka. So he's furious. He wants revenge. And he is starting this snake sacrifice in order to kill all the snakes. And he goes so far that he even wants Lord Indra also there, offered in the sacrifice. You were all laughing when I was reading that. Because, it sounds really, wow, he's going a little overboard here in his revengeful mood. And as the purport says, he actually did not see things with spiritual vision. Even though he is also a great soul, he is the son of Parikshit Maharaj, but nevertheless, at least temporary, he was affected by mundane views, by the bodily concept actually, that, my father got killed, and I have to take revenge. And this view is not lasting for very long, because then a couple of verses later, he immediately gives in, and he says, okay then, so be it. Where he is requested to give up the sacrifice, he quite easily actually lets go of it. So it shows that, it didn't take that much to get him back onto the more transcendental vision. But, it is very much in contrast with actually Parikshit Maharaj's vision. Because actually Vaishnav mood is that we should not be in this revengeful mood. And there is a nice verse which I want to share with you, where actually it is said that even, this is 1st Canto 18th chapter verse 48, it says there, the devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. That's actually, the Vaishnav mood. So Janmajaya is not really acting according to that. And of course, to see things from the transcendental platform, that requires faith in Krishna. Otherwise, we cannot so easily connect our situation, whatever it may be, with Krishna being behind it, with Krishna arranging things, right? Unless we have firm faith in Krishna, that vision will not be possible, actually. Then we will see things from mundane point of view. So that faith in Krishna is actually what enables us to connect things with Krishna's arrangement, seeing things as Krishna's arrangement. And I guess that's why faith is such an important thing to develop for a devotee. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he compares the faith of a young devotee to a newborn baby girl. Usually baby girls are a little weaker as a rule than baby boys. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives that comparison that the faith of a new devotee is like a newborn baby girl, and newborn baby girl has to be protected and nourished. So actually the essence of preaching, of caring for devotees, is really to protect and nourish a devotee's faith. And also Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that unflinching faith is like the currency by which we purchase Krishna. So that's, it is very logical actually, you know, if a devotee has unflinching faith in Krishna, that obliges Krishna, that actually conquers Krishna, it ties him up. Even in our relationships, we have a similar principle that if a person has strong faith in us, then that makes us feel obliged and conquers our heart, actually, right? So this faith in Krishna, extremely important, and without this faith, we cannot even cultivate tolerance or the transcendental vision. And so the way Janmajaya acts seems to be very much in contrast with Parikshit Maharaj's view. For example, when he got cursed, he could have very easily counteracted the curse, but he didn't. Because he had that view, he had that vision, that transcendental vision of seeing Krishna in the picture. There is a nice verse and purport where Prabhupada actually describes this. I have collected all different things in my little verse book because my memory is not the best. So I would like to share this with you. This is 4th canto, 6th chapter, verse 48, verse and purport. There it is said, "My dear Lord, if in some places materialists who are already bewildered by the insurmountable illusory energy of the Supreme Godhead sometimes commit offenses, a saintly person with compassion does not take this seriously, knowing that they commit offenses because they are overpowered by the illusory energy. He does not show his prowess to counteract them." And in the purport, Prabhupada connects that with Parikshit Maharaj. He says, "It is said that the beauty of a tapasvi or saintly person is forgiveness. There are many instances in the spiritual history of the world in which many saintly persons, although unnecessarily harassed, did not take action, although they could have done so. Because it was desired by Krishna that Parikshit Maharaj agree to the punishment so that the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam would thus be revealed to the world, Parikshit Maharaj was advised not to take action. A Vaishnava is personally tolerant for the benefit of others. When he does not show his prowess, this does not mean that he is lacking in strength. Rather, it indicates that he is tolerant for the welfare of the entire human society." So that's a pretty nice way to see, you know, how Parikshit Maharaj's response to the curse. For once, it was his chance to go back to Godhead by accepting the curse, but that's only one aspect. The other aspect is there, that he is tolerant for the sake of the whole world getting that benefit of Bhagavatam being spoken. Right? So it shows how Vaishnava actually can turn can turn any calamity into an opportunity. by seeing things as Krishna's divine arrangement, you can turn even such a calamity that after a few days you have to face death, you can turn that into a most amazing opportunity. That's the Vaishnav way, how to deal with calamities and little earthquakes which Krishna might send us along. And I mean, I've had also some good opportunities for cultivating that kind of vision. You may know I was diagnosed with cancer 2 times, and every time these were the best times of my life. Yes, because somehow by Krishna's mercy I could really turn them into opportunities. And so many realizations come when we stand a little closer to the edge. And, you know, we can let go of some things and move on to other things and. So this is how we are meant to deal with different challenges, just like Pariksit Maharaj. And I mean, also a nice example of that is Chitraketu also, when he got cursed by Mother Parvati to take birth as a demon. So he could have easily counteracted that curse. But no, he didn't. He also simply accepted it and turned it around into an opportunity. And he left, you know, his demon body in such a glorious way as Vichasura. This is one of my favorite examples, how a devotee should actually face death, like Vichasura or Pariksit Maharaj. So, yeah, and in one sense we can actually say we are actually all in Pariksit Maharaj's situation. We all do have an appointment with death. We do. The only difference is he knew after how many days he would have that appointment, and we don't. That's the only difference. But basically also Pariksit Maharaj is teaching us how we are meant to spend this last phase of life to prepare. And I thought I used this class maybe to touch upon a few little points, because I have one of my courses which I put together is actually on the Vanaprastha Ashram. And I was requested by one senior lady of your congregation to speak about this. Otherwise, without her request, I probably wouldn't have had the courage to mention these things in the first lecture. I don't want to look like I'm coming here and telling all the senior devotees what they should do or something. But since she requested me, I thought, great, yeah, it actually matches so nicely to this topic of Pariksit Maharaj leaving this world. And again, it is very much connected with culture also, because a devotee's and a non-devotee's approach to death and this final phase in life is very, very different. So in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all, naturally, first of all, death is the most horrifying experience. And also, we are so much in denial, and we try to use this last phase of life one more time for sense gratification. And of course, trying to keep the body young and attractive and beautiful and cool and. So these are the approaches in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all. But then in a culture where self-realization is the goal, there, people have a whole different attitude and approach to death and also this final phase of life. So in such a culture, you know, the final phase of life is meant to spend in this ashram of Vanaprastha, which is basically, and it's gone, we are not there yet somehow, you know, nobody even talks much about it. Or the other ashrams, there is seminars and so on, talks about it, Brahmachari life, Grihastha life, sannyas. But Vanaprastha, I come across this, that there's also a lot of confusion how this is meant to look like, you know, that often devotees feel a little threatened by this idea of Vanaprastha, or ladies may think it means the husband puts on saffron and walks out, that this is Vanaprastha ashram. But no, no, not at all. So, yes, I mean, in one sense we can say Parikshit Maharaj, he's actually teaching us how we are meant to spend this last phase in life and to actually really concentrate on preparing for death. And if we prepare for death, for a devotee, death is actually the most joyful and glorious moment where we really get that chance to get out of here, to get on the plane back home, back to Godhead. Yeah, so, you know, devotee and non-devotee, very different approach to death, you know, very different. So, and I mean, what time do you usually finish? 9 o'clock? Yes? Okay. Let me just touch upon a few little things and then maybe see if there is some corrections and comments and further points of discussion or something. So when I speak about this last phase of life, I like to focus on three principles which we are meant to internally cultivate. And the first principle is, you know, when we imagine Vanaprastha actually means to go and live in the forest. But we are meant to extricate the underlying principles, and we can apply them in whatever situation we may be, even living in New York or whatever it may be. So there's underlying principles. And they are, like, the first underlying principle is that we are meant to simplify our surroundings. We are meant to free ourselves from so many things which we easily have accumulated during our Grihastha life. Like when we imagine we go to Vrindavan, live in Vrindavan, what do we have there? A little room with a bed, with a table, and some shelves, and a little simple bathroom, and that's basically it. So we can bring that same mood into our environment, that we are simply freeing ourselves and simplifying our surroundings more and more, getting rid of things, you know, unnecessary things, fancy furniture, whatever it may be. We pass it on to the next generation, or we give it away, or we sell it, or whatever. And this is very liberating. I mean, I personally went through this, you know, with my lifestyle now. I have, you know, just a little box in Germany, a little box in Bangladesh, and that's basically it. And it's a very liberating experience, actually, because all these things which we are attached to, they do occupy some little space in the mind. And to free ourselves from that is, yeah, it's a liberating experience. And, yeah, we actually realize that we don't need much to keep body and soul together. We don't actually require much. And simplifying our surroundings also means that we are meant to actually accept a little austerity again. Tapasya. That's one aspect of the Vanaprastha ashram, that we invite this tapasya back into our life and and keep things very simple. And also that we are meant to actually leave the home. At least every now and again, for 1 week, for 2 weeks, for 1 month. going somewhere, preaching, traveling, serving, spending time in the Holy Land, coming back, going, coming back. You know, that we extricate ourselves a little bit from the comforts of the home, because that is a pretty strong attachment, that attachment to one's home. And ultimately, the vision we are meant to cultivate is that actually no place in this world is our home. Our real home is the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. That's our real home. Sometimes people ask me, so where's your home? Where are you based? And I, yeah, well, no home, no home. Every time when I'm just feeling, you know, comfortable somewhere, then it's time to move to the next place. So it's quite a good lifestyle, actually, because, you know, you don't stay long enough anywhere to really feel at home. And that obviously makes it more easy to understand that, yes, this material world is not our home. It's actually Goloka Vrindavan, like that. So, and then second principle of the renounced phase of life, or that preparatory phase of life, is that we simplify our externals. Right? As I mentioned, in material life and its culture, we're trying by hook or by crook to fight against all the natural signs of old age. Right? That we color the hair and this and that, and oh my God, facelift surgeries and yeah, I mean, I've come across this, that even amongst devotees, they are considering to have plastic surgery. Yes, yeah. In India, initiated devotees. My God, I was shocked, you know. How can we be in that headspace? You know, we are meant to accept all these warnings of Krishna as, you know, as a warning, hey, time is running out, let's get ready, you know, and not fight against this, and try and make the body by hook or by crook young and attractive looking, and so that's not the mood. We, you know, it's almost inappropriate in spiritual practice, actually, you know. So that's why the cultural recommendations are to really simplify one's externals. Let go of jewelry, of makeup, of bright colors, and simplify, simplify, simplify. And that again helps us to understand and realize we are not this body. Because that's what old age is all about. We are actually witnessing how the body falls apart. Right? Yeah, so by embracing, you know, Krishna's wonderful system he gives us to prepare for death, you know, we actually, yeah, it helps to get off the bodily platform, you know. And this is not only for the ladies, but also for the men. Men might have also some attachments to cool things, some cool aftershave or this or that, or fancy watches, or, you know, the attachments maybe look a little different, but same thing is there also. So we are meant to simplify our externals. I mean, the Bhagavatam is full of quotes where it says we should wear bark. So, all right, no need to come in bark for Mangaladi tomorrow. But no, we extract the principle. Simplify. Get detached from externals. And then the third principle, which many devotees find the most difficult one, is to simplify our eating. And actually, again, the material body is already helping us in this direction, because anybody over 50 or 60 knows fire of digestion is not so powerful anymore. We can't digest so much. Or we become overweight if we put if we eat too much, and so actually Krishna is already giving us all kinds of helping hands here to let go of that attachment to eating fancily. Tongue is always demanding so much gratification, So we are meant to simplify our eating. Keep it more and more simple. More and more simple. Get detached from that kind of enjoyment to satisfy the tongue. So in all these principles are simply meant to help us to deepen our focus on hearing and chanting. And actually, that's basically what Phrikkhut Maharaj did in his last days. You know, how he prepared himself. He accepted these principles. He taught us how we actually meant to prepare. Yeah, so in that way we can see, yes, there's so many distractions from so many different angles there. And yeah, so this last phase of life, very, very important. And the more, you know, we embrace these kind of helping principles and deepen our meditation and build up internal life. This is also one thing that we are, you know, in also Kali Yuga, we tend to give much more emphasis on externals, on external achievements, external successes. But again, body will force us. Sooner or later, we can't run around and have so many big achievements anymore. We have to make that switch into internal life and building up some deeper substance internally. If we don't do that voluntarily, sooner or later, body will force us. Health crisis. And we, you know, Krishna stops us from running. And if we haven't built anything deeper internally, we can fall into some vacuum, some hole. And then, oh, we get all depressed. Oh, now nobody needs me anymore. And, you know, so that's also one important aspect of Vanaprastha Ashram, that we are meant to gradually let go of our more external responsibilities and duties, and we are meant to put more energy into building up internal life. And then, you know, there's some substance there, and then as the body gradually gives up on us type thing, we have something to fall back on. Like that. Okay, well, maybe I will leave it at that and see if anybody has some corrections or comments or further discussions or whatever. Okay, maybe we start with you, Prabhu.
King Janmanjaya, the son of Parikshit Maharaj, and Janmanjaya already saw that Parikshit Maharaj didn't take the revenge against the son of a brahmana.
Yes.
And he accepted the natural situation, and he just went and left here Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, being the king as a kshatriya, I'm sure Parikshit Maharaj knew that my son is going to take the revenge to the snakes because he is a kshatriya. And when this happened, it is natural for the son to get angry because his father is being killed. Same thing happened with the Dhruva Maharaj when his step brother was he took the same thing. So it's kind of it's natural, isn't it, that I mean he's gonna act for his father to be killed like that.
You want to comment on that? Okay.
Not sure where it is in there, but actually Parikshit Maharaj said, so now is it all right for me to leave my body, you know? And he actually then went into a trance, and he actually the snake bird didn't kill him. He left his body before it, and then his body. So, in essence, the snake bird didn't kill him. I don't know whether that plays into it or not. But.
Yeah, I mean, there's always so many angles and aspects and instructions, and you know.
I find it interesting that there's a circle there that one son caused, you know, did the snake on the father, and then the father was, you know, he didn't take revenge, and then Pariksit didn't take revenge, but the two sons.
Yes. Prabhu, you want to add something?
Slightly different part of your presentation, that was, you know, you talked about, you know, when the building of faith, and that how you not have to be tolerant and not, in some cases, take revenge for things that happen to us. But in the same way you're talking about building faith, it seems that if someone causes difficulty, causes problems, especially in spiritual life, then we lose trust. And that's coming from a different angle. But how does one deal with that when he's been disappointed in spiritual life?
Well, I mean, it depends on the vision. Like, I'm with a third Diksha Guru, you know, so one could say, oh, well, how is it that you still have faith in, you know, in ISKCON and the process and so on? But again, if we see things, you know, more from a transcendental vision, then we understand, yes, I mean, even elevated personalities can face some difficulties, they can make mistakes. So, I mean, if you were asking if somebody treats us badly or disappoints us, we lose trust. Well, I mean, Prabhupada always gave that example of ISKCON being like a hospital, and we are here to get cured. So we all are in the wash, and you know, we all have some shortcomings, and we might be, you know, treating each other sometimes not so nicely or whatever. But with a spiritual vision, we see that simply as part of the material disease. Like in the hospital, you know, people are vomiting on the floor and passing stool and urine or something, but we are not taking that personally against me. But we simply understand the person is diseased. So in the same way, if people treat us not nicely or, you know, unpleasant things are happening, well, it's all part of the disease condition, and usually those persons who treat us badly, they're actually suffering the most under it, because actually everybody wants to have nice relationships. So, I mean, all I can say is, for me personally, that has never been a reason to lose faith, you know, or trust. I mean, maybe we may have to adjust things towards that one particular person, that maybe we can't give him certain responsibilities and because he's not ready for it, he let me down or whatever. But in general, to you lose trust and faith in the process of devotional service, that only happens when we really take things in and take it personal. Isn't it? But if we see that everybody is in the whole purifying process and we all have issues to work on, I mean, compassion starts at home. We have to, you know, we have to be compassionate and tolerant towards our own members first, you know. Otherwise, how will we get anywhere, really, you know? Yeah, well, that's a whole different topic. I mean, maybe I should take the opportunity to quickly say a few words about the two books which I brought with me. One of them is Spiritual Culture, Krishna's Divine System. It basically introduces Vaishnav culture as Krishna's system in order to create harmony and stability in this world. And we can say that our disease actually is that we think our modern systems are better than Krishna's system. And all our social problems we are facing, inside is gone, outside is gone, we can see them as a global reaction for not following Krishna's system. Things like divorce, single motherhood, violence towards women, and. In Krishna's system, they don't have a place, actually. And yeah, I mean, it really offers food for thought. And I can maybe also share that once you open the page of contents, you will see it actually mainly is centered around the highly important position we women are meant to play. That we are meant to be the power of inspiration to the men, auspicious source of energy, as Prabhupada says it. Auspicious source of energy to men as a class. It's all based on the Bhagavatam, what Prabhupada says. And yeah, it touches upon a few hot and controversial issues, and I'm trying to give some insights. Simply how Krishna's system is meant to function. And at the same time, we can assess ourselves how close or far we are from Krishna's system. And then we can make a conscious choice, you know, what aspects of which culture we want to invite in our life. But unless we have deeper insights, we easily just go with the flow and we just accept all kinds of, you know, modern Kali Yuga ideas, which might not be very supportive to our spiritual life at all. But because of lack of training, we can't actually make a conscious choice. And this book, by the way, it is being used now as a handbook for brahmachari and bhakta training in Bhaktivedanta manner. Huh? My humble self. Sorry. So I don't want to promote my book here, but the topic is so relevant. Yes. So it's been used in Bhaktivedanta manner as a handbook for brahmachari and bhakta training, also in Vrindavan and also in Germany, Simhachalam, and quite a few temples have accepted this. So that's one book. And the other one is Sheltering Relationships, the Foundation of Devotee Care. The essence is that basically without having a coach, a mentor, we cannot actually really make advancement. And without becoming a mentor ourselves, eventually, we also remain on a more lower level of spiritual practice. So it's also a very crucial and highly relevant topic. We have lost so many devotees over the last 50 years. Because we have not understood how important it is to have a mentor. Just to have a Diksha Guru is not enough. Because we see our Diksha Gurus only once or twice a year. They often have thousands of disciples. Or Diksha Guru might not even be present anymore. So, we need such trusting, confidential relationships. I once heard in Mayapur the statement in the Bhagavatam class that all those personalities who could not maintain their guru and sannyas ashram, their guru position in sannyas ashram, had that thing in common, that they did not have sheltering relationships. Yes. And well, I'm with the third Diksha Guru, so I can definitely say that about my two previous ones. You know, that they did not have trusting relationships. You know, yes. So, very important topic. I mean, in that regard, also Bharat Maharaj is a fantastic example. He was on the level of Baba. And he tried to give shelter to this deer, but he didn't have a mentor. He didn't have anybody tapping him on the shoulder and saying, hey, it's enough now with the deer. You know, let the deer be deer and get back to your spiritual practice. So he got completely carried away. And the transcendental emotions of Baba level easily can go back into material attachments. Bharat Maharaj is a classic example. You know, it's a good devotee care story, which warns us. Yeah, so I would be just so honored if you would like to accept this book in your life, and I'm distributing it for $10 each. So I will have them with me in the evening programs, which we have today and tomorrow in the house program. So, yes. Okay, so it's over time, so maybe we'll leave it at that, if you don't mind. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Ganta Chimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Samaveda Bhaktavinda Ki, Goloka Namah.